This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We feel that it's very important to highlight what's happening to adolescent mothers in education because they are a highly invisible group in government policies.
That's Ellen Martinez, author of a Human Rights Watch report on African policies towards pregnant teens and adolescent mothers attending school. Details coming up.
Also, Muslims around the world are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Fitr after an extensive Ramadan fast. And democracy is at work in Zimbabwe as the country goes to the polls on July 30th.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, South Africa has suffered its second deadly mosque attack in just over a month, shocking a country that prides itself on religious tolerance. Police say two people were fatally stabbed and several others wounded in Malmesbury near Cape Town. Police fatally shot the lone attacker after he charged at officers. Police say they are investigating and did not discuss possible motives. The attack occurred at the end of Ramadan, Islam's month of fasting and reflection. On May 10th, attackers killed a mosque leader and injured two other people at a mosque in the town of Verulam on the outskirts of the eastern port city of Durban. No arrests have been made. About 1.5% of South Africa's 55 million people are Muslim.
Muslims around the world are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Fitr after the Ramadan fast. Muslim clerics are calling on the faithful to retain the virtues gained during the holy month. Reporter Gift Agiriga from Abuja has more in this report.
Eid falls on the first day of the month of Shawwal. The aim of this feast is to be grateful for the successful completion of the month-long Ramadan fast. In Nigeria, Muslims are in high spirits, ready for the celebration, which is also called Salah in Arabic. The Nigerian government has already declared Friday and Monday public holidays to enable Muslims to mark the occasion. Tamim Yusuf, an imam in Abuja, says there are lessons every Muslim can learn from the just concluded Ramadan.
Ramadan is a complete school that changes, that molds one's behavior from bad to good, from good to better. It teaches us so many lessons, both spiritual, social, economic, and what have you. Ramadan elevates one level of iman so that he be closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Ramadan teaches us sincerity, which we are expected to be sincere and patriotic towards our nation.
Yusuf called on Muslims to live a life of sacrifice, charity, and love for one another. Some Muslims expressed their happiness and their gratitude to Allah for seeing them through another Ramadan fast. Zakaria Osman was dressed in white jalabiya with a cap to fit called tagia in Arabic, and he was seated in his brother's shop who sells groceries. And additional MA was wearing a white shirt with a pair of pants, beaming with smiles.
Alhamdulillah, so far we have learned more from the Ramadan. As Salah is coming, inshallah, I want to celebrate the Salah with people in harmony, generously, with happiness, inshallah.
My preparation for the forthcoming Eid al-Fitr, alhamdulillah, we thank God for everything, for good health, which is very paramount in the life of human being. But in terms of economy, everybody knows that things are very, very tough.
Despite the economic hardship the country is experiencing, there is no doubt that Muslims in Nigeria are prepared to celebrate this holy feast.
Allah the Almighty,
Allahu Allah,
protect me and guide me,
Allahu Allah,
oh, to your love and...
Eid Mubarak to Muslims around the world. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja.
An international human rights group says tens of thousands of pregnant girls and adolescent mothers are banned or discouraged from attending school across Africa. Human Rights Watch examines the issue in a 40-page report released today ahead of the Day of the African Child on June 16th from the Kenyan capital. Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, representatives from the New York-based human rights group said many African governments have made strong commitments in recent years to ensure that pregnant girls and young mothers can attend school. However, countries such as Equatorial Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Tanzania still ban pregnant girls or adolescent mothers from government schools. Eileen Martinez is children's rights researcher at Human Rights Watch and the author of the report.
We feel that it's very important to highlight what's happening to adolescent mothers in education because they are a highly invisible group in government policies. This is despite the fact that actually Africa has the highest teenage fertility rates in the world, and yet governments have in some cases managed to ensure that they include pregnant girls in their analysis. But in many cases, we have found that this is lacking and many governments are actually simply not including the needs of adolescent mothers.
The report provides the first comprehensive analysis of laws, policies and practices across all African Union member states that support or block adolescent girls' schooling during pregnancy and motherhood. It defines that Tanzania is among a handful of African countries that officially discriminate against young mothers as state policy. Many more countries opt to keep adolescent mothers in school, although implementation of their laws and policies frequently falls short, and monitoring of adolescent mothers' re-entry to education remains weak overall. Terry Otieno, the national coordinator of the Forum for African Women Educationalists, FAWE, Kenya chapter, explains.
One of the challenges that we have really experienced is lack of the policy enforcement. You realize that, yes, the policy is there. The schools are supposed to implement it. There's no legal enforcement whereby when a teacher has forcefully sent a girl child out of the school, what should happen to the teacher? There's nothing in the policy that says that this teacher should be arrested or this teacher should be done this. There should be a line in the policy or a sentence in the policy that emphasizes that in case this happens, these are the repercussions.
Every year, thousands of school-age African girls become pregnant. Girls from poor and more marginalized households and communities are among the most affected. Christine Nduku is a teenage mother who resides in one of Nairobi's informal settlements. She says life has never been the same since she became pregnant and gave birth to her first child while in school.
Nilipata mtoto 2016, nikiwa na 16 years, na nilikonga primary class 8. Sikumalizianga juu nilipatanga nikuwa iyo class 8.
She says, I became pregnant in 2016, aged 16 years, while doing my final year in primary school. I had to drop out of school to become a mother. I was unable to finish school. My mother is an unemployed single mother, so we just struggle to raise the child.
Niko na single mother, najiwezia na kazi, na struggling tu na mtoto.
Martinez advises African governments to urgently adopt laws and policies to ensure that schools allow and support pregnant girls to stay in school and to return to school after having a child.
One of the recommendations that we have included is that governments produce far more accurate data so that they can also understand the immensity of the challenge and how many girls are being deprived of their education, but also on the positive side, how many of them are actually staying in school as a result of good policies.
In Kenya, the government's policies prescribe that adolescent mothers should go back to school, but many girls face financial and social barriers to return. In some areas, school officials do not always follow the policies, and communities and pregnant girls are not always aware that adolescent mothers are welcome in school. This is Ruben Chama reporting for VOA in Nairobi.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has a new cabinet, placing allies in key posts. The new cabinet was sworn in today. General Mohamed Ahmed Zaki Mohamed, the head of the Republican Guard, has become defense minister. General Mahmoud Taufik, who had led national security forces, will be interior minister. Mohamed Ahmed Mohamed Moit, who has served in various ministries, takes on the key role of finance minister. Egyptian authorities are implementing an economic reform program tied to $12 billion loan from International Monetary Fund issued in 2016. Sisi, who came to power in 2013 after ousting the nation's only civilian elected president, won re-election in March in a race with no significant opposition. Critics say he has quashed most dissent and imprisoned thousands of rights activists, journalists, and opponents. Egypt faces a number of problems, including a battered economy and a significant threat from militant attacks.
Today is a big day for sports fans. VOA's Sunny Young fills us in.
Sporty World Cup greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. The 2018 World Cup football tournament officially kicked off Thursday in Moscow, Russia. Russia is hosting Saudi Arabia in the opening match. The first two African teams, the Pharaohs of Egypt and the Atlas Lions of Morocco, will be in action Friday. Egypt's head coach says Liverpool star Mohamed Salah, injured last month in the UEFA Champions League final, is almost 100% certain to play against Uruguay, and the Moroccans will meet Iran. I'll have special World Cup reports at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC.
Democracy is at work in Zimbabwe. The country goes to the polls on July 30th, and thousands of citizens are expressing interest in running for public office. From Harare, reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has the report.
Job Sikala is a member of the main opposition alliance, MDCT Alliance, and will be running for the Member of Parliament post in Zengeza West constituents. He describes how individuals can register as candidates.
Today is just the process whereby aspiring candidates are filing their papers with the nomination court. If your papers are filed off record, and you will only be waiting for the pronouncement by the presiding officer whether your filing has been successful or not.
One's application may not be successful if they have a criminal record or submit incomplete documents or even fail to pay the required fee at the nomination court. Sikala adds that all candidates should know their verdict by the end of the day. Tendai Ndoro is an independent aspiring member of parliament for Hatfield in Harare. She says the process has not been smooth.
The process is chaotic, it's hectic, but it's a process. Crowded. I think we need to do better.
Douglas Monzora is the secretary general of the main opposition party, MDC, and a member of the main opposition alliance. He says the Electoral Commission has not made a voter's roll available as is required by law. The board had assured a delegation of international observers that the rolls would be made available to opposition parties as a matter of urgency.
The main issue is that we have not been availed the voter's roll up to this point in time. It would have been prudent to have the voters for given before nomination. But the ZEC says that they are going to give us the voters roll after nomination.
Zimbabwe recently compiled a new voters roll, and any aspiring candidate needs to be nominated by registered voters. This is one of the many reasons political players needed the voters roll prior to the nomination court. Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliamentary business and other political developments. They have been closely following the nominations. He says there's some division in the opposition, with many well-known politicians deciding not to join a grand alliance to defeat the ruling party.
So it's interesting that MDC has filed under the alliance. Joyce Mujuru is standing alone. Elton Mangoma is standing alone. And also Priscilla Musiya-Irambu has filed nomination papers on behalf of Tokozani Kupe. Now you have all these political parties who could form a grand coalition but are choosing to go at it alone, and it's unfortunate.
Campaigning for office will intensify in the coming weeks. Observers say that past elections have experienced violence, but so far, the run-up to the July polls has been fairly peaceful. They say the stakes are high. Voters will either re-elect the ruling party and its presidential candidate, or break nearly 40 years of dominance by the party that established independence. ZANU-PF. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari this month said the country is moving its annual Democracy Day to June 12th instead of May 29th. The move recognizes the June 12, 1993 election, considered one of the fairest in the nation's history. But the military government refused to accept the results, and the winner, Mahmoud Kasimawu Abiola, was never allowed to take office. Abiola died in jail in 1998. Reporter Mike Mbonye in Nigeria spoke with political analysts about Buhari's decision and about the status of Nigeria's democracy 25 years later. Raisa Achara is a professor of constitutional law in Enugu, southeast Nigeria. He likes the date change.
It is something that has been in the minds of our people, and I do not think that there's a problem if after 25 years of error, that there's some attempt to correct the error.
Although the Nigeria has elected president since 1999, Achara notes that its democracy still has weaknesses and the democratic infrastructure needs to be shored up.
The point about things is that we should get to a point where we realize that nations are built on institutions. And if we've been doing things wrongly before and we do them right, there's nothing wrong with it and we should encourage it.
For much of Nigeria's history as an independent nation, the military ruled. Like Borsi, Tony Francis is a Port Harcourt lawyer and public affairs analyst. And she says there are some in the country who look fondly on the years when generals were in charge.
From experience, it would appear that the military, the way they were going about things, the discipline they instilled in the populace was better than what is happening now. However, the general notion is that the worst civilian administration is better than any military rule. That is because of the dictatorial tendencies of military rule.
She says corruption is among the country's biggest problems and hampers both economic development and support for civilian leadership. Even so, she says Nigeria has something to offer Africa in terms of democratic development.
So on this note, I would feel that some African countries would not want to toe the steps of Nigeria. But on the other hand, like I'm viewing it from both sides. But my definite stand is that Nigeria is definitely showing the African countries, some African countries, the pathway, at least the fact that they have stood as a common entity despite the challenges they have faced all these years.
Raisa Achara and Legborsi Tony Francis spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Nigeria for VOA.
Infanticide is the second most important cause of female incarceration in Senegal. Rights groups who have raised concern over the conditions of women's detention blame the country's restrictive laws on abortion. Many are calling on the government to loosen its legislation. In the western region of Thies, Sophia Christensen reports on the issue through the story of a former convict.
Aminata, a name she chose to hide her true identity, was asleep with her two youngest children when the police came to her home in the town of Mbour in the middle of the night. She had given birth 2 days earlier, and a neighbor had seen her bury the baby. Aminata claims it was stillborn. She says she was impregnated by a cousin who took advantage of her situation after she lost her husband and moved to Mbour to find work. I did not want the baby, she says. Aminata was arrested on the spot and served 4 years in prison for infanticide, 1 year shorter than the typical sentence. She was released in 2015. After drug-related offences, infanticide is the biggest cause of female incarceration in Senegal. Rights groups estimated that in 2015, almost 1 in 5 women were arrested on charges of infanticide. In the Thiès Detention Centre, where Aminata served her time, this figure nears 30%. Joseph Fay is a lawyer for the Senegal Human Rights League, a local partner of the Paris-based International Federation of Human Rights, which, among other things, advocates for legalized abortion around the world.
Le crime d'infanticide est souvent la conséquence de situations de discrimination.
He says female prisons are overpopulated and that the country's strict abortion laws are largely to blame. Senegal is one of 10 countries in Africa where abortion is prohibited in all circumstances. There are strong feelings against abortion in Senegal, both in society and at the government level. In a nation that is 96% Muslim, imams speak out forcefully against the practice. Women's rights advocates say there is also the cultural perception that allowing women to have abortions on demand will encourage them to be promiscuous. Women in Senegal can legally terminate their pregnancies if 3 doctors certify that her life is at risk, a task activists say is almost impossible to complete within the abortion time limit. In the female quarter of the Thiès Detention Centre, women chat quietly amongst themselves as they embroider tablecloths and napkins. Prison officials say there are never more than 30 detainees at one time, but both rights groups and former convicts claim the real number is higher. Aminata recalls sharing a cell with more than 60 others. The United Nations has taken issue with the conditions of women's detention. In a 2015 report, the world body says Senegal's prisons are not adapted to women, with no facilities to handle pregnancies or accommodate children. Awa Tungera works for the Association of Senegalese Women Lawyers, an organization advocating the legalization of abortion in cases of rape and incest, or when a woman's health is at risk. Considering the role they play in society, there really shouldn't be any woman in jail, says Tungera. She says her association is pushing the government to consider alternative penalties that would allow women to serve their sentences outside prison. This would be better for their families and for the education of their children, she adds. Aminata was not allowed to take her children to prison. They were collected by her eldest daughter and taken back to their native village, where they stayed until her release. Shunned by her family, Aminata now lives in a corrugated iron shed on her elder brother's mango plantation, 12 kilometers from Mbour. Aissatou Kébé is a program manager for Toastan, a Dakar-based NGO that helps reintegrate former detainees. Being arrested for infanticide is something that will continue to haunt you for the rest of your life, she says. These women are rejected by their families and rejected by society. But Kébé does not think loosening abortion laws would have a significant impact. Many women are illiterate, says Kébé. They would not even think there could be an alternative to giving birth and smothering the baby. She is pushing for more access to contraceptives as a solution. Family Planning 2020 says fewer than 16% of women in Senegal were using a modern method of contraception last year. Aminata believes her fate would have been different had she had more options. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Thiès.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports.
We will rock you.
Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. right here on The Voice of America.